All right, I'll kick it off with some housekeeping while the remainder of our attendees join in. So in accordance with our mandate to operate in the public interest, the ISO will be audio recording this session and making the session recording available to the general public on our website. Accessibility of these discussions is important to ensure the openness and transparency of this process and to facilitate the participation of stakeholders. Participation in the session is completely voluntary and subject to this notice. And this information is collected in accordance with Section 33C of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. If you have any questions or concerns regarding how this information will be handled, please contact our Director of Information and Governance Services. We've got the address there, the telephone and an email address, should you need to connect with them. Again, COVID-19, the update, not a big surprise for right now. We are continuing with our virtual sessions via phone or webinar indefinitely, and that does include our stakeholder engagement sessions. Any updates can be found again on our website on stakeholder engagement and then COVID-19. So who we have that will be presenting today. And if you guys just want to give a wave when I read your name. So Mike Law, our President and CEO. Todd Fior, VP, Finance and Chief Financial Officer. Dennis Frelick, VP, Grid Reliability. Miranda Keating-Erickson, VP, Markets. Pauline McLean, VP, Law, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary. Karen Campbell, Director, Settlement, Credit and Business Planning. Mike Deesing, Director of Corporate Communications. He's helping out on the back end. And Carla Anderson, Stakeholder Engagement and Communications. And sorry, when we're waving, you might not be able to see those individuals as they need to be speaking for their video to move. So Mike, if we can go to the next slide. Purpose of the session, presenting the stakeholder input provided after our first session, and presenting and discussing our consideration of stakeholder feedback and plans for 2021. These were the registered session attendees as of September 14th when we posted the session. We want to just move and our agenda, welcome and housekeeping, that's what I'm going through. And then I'm going to pass it to Mike Law for some introductory remarks. We'll go through the budget, remind you again, the budget review process steps. We'll go through what we heard and how we plan to proceed. And we welcome your questions throughout the presentation. And then we'll do a session closeout and some next steps. Our ISO stakeholder engagement framework, that was, as you are well aware, we rolled that out in January 2020. And this provides our approach to stakeholder engagement. And it's important. Its importance in how we achieve our mandate. This is our approach to engagement, and these are our engagement principles that are part of the framework. And now, participation of everyone is critical to this process. So we just ask that everyone listen to understand others' perspectives, disagree respectfully, balance their time fairly, and keep an open mind. Now I'm just going to go through how, if you have not participated in a Zoom session before, how you ask questions. When asking or typing in a question, please state your organization's name and your first and last name. If you want to type in your question, you can type them into the Q&A window. Click the Q&A button next to raise hand and type your question in, and those can also, you can also upvote those questions. You can also raise your virtual hand and ask your question. You again click the icon. The host will see that you've raised your hands, will ask you to unmute yourself, and then you can ask your questions and have your discussion. And so where are those controls? So next slide, Mike. If you are on a 2-in-1 or a Mac computer, hover your cursor over the bottom of the Zoom app and the controls will appear. If you're on a smartphone, you should be able to see the raise hand, lower hand, or the Q&A buttons right on your screen. And if you're calling in, the next slide, Mike, If you're calling in and it's through a conference call, you can also still ask questions. If you hit *9 on your dial pad, we will see that you have raised your hand, and we'll also ask you to unmute and to toggle with mute and unmute as *6. So I think that's all of my housekeeping there. And I'm going to pass this on to Mike Law. Mike.
Thanks, Carla, and good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to take a minute up at the front just to have a quick conversation around where the business plan and budget process fits within the ISO's broader strategic focus overall and our strategic planning focus overall. So the ISO does have a 5-year strategic plan. It's a 2019 through 2023 strategic plan. And we've socialized that fairly broadly within industry over the last year. And within that strategic plan, there are 3 main strategic objectives that we focus on. The first is around people. The second is around the electricity framework itself. And the third one relates to technology and technology integration, optionality, both internally within the ISO and externally on the power system itself. Now, a 5-year strategic plan always needs an execution strategy and to be broken down into what are effectively bite-sized chunks. And we have an internal execution process that we're working through. And what that delivers is effectively on a yearly basis, a set of initiatives that form our early thinking around the business plan and hence the budget. We then work with stakeholders to narrow those business initiatives down, frame them up in a little more detail. And that business plan and budget process then feeds our yearly corporate goals as an organization. So this is one step in a multi-tiered approach for our organization that ties together that long-term 5-year view down to the yearly corporate goals and deliverables for the organization. Mike, next slide, please. Now, with that said, over the last year, beginning of 2020, the ISO recognized, like everybody else in the province, the very unique economic conditions that we are faced with in the province, both driven by the oil price collapse and the ongoing pandemic, such that we put in place some shorter term priorities for the organization to focus on. Those ultimately had 3 main aspects to them. The first being cost management across the industry value chain. So that's everything from ISO's internal costs through to understanding the broad costs that we drive into industry, but also that are inherent within the industry itself, from transmission costs, losses, everything else that we think about or have the ability to influence. We also are very focused on facilitating business within the province and ensuring that the actions and the activities that we undertake do not inhibit business within the province and ultimately move to facilitate and help with the economic recovery within the province. And the third aspect is that of ensuring a simple and agile approach to our internal operations. We want to be more efficient, more cost-effective, and ultimately that helps underpin the first 2 priorities that we've outlined. So as we go through all of our business initiatives and ultimately move them through our thought process, we apply these 3 priority focuses on them as a lens, and that helps us determine how to move them forward, whether or not to move them forward, and effectively the priorities and the pace that we might move those forward. And this approach and thinking all aligns with the conversations that I've had during my CEO roundtables over the past year, both with industry and with agencies and associations. So hopefully that provides everybody with a bit of an understanding with respect to how, as an organization, we think about these initiatives, and also how we're going to be thinking about them as we move through 2021. So I think now we move on to Karen.
Yes, so we just wanted to reiterate the budget review process steps. So if I can just get the next slide. So we're in step three right now, which is the follow-up business initiatives meeting. And we're also in the midst of developing the own cost budget. And then 2 weeks from now, we'll have, or about a week and a half, we'll have the own cost technical meeting where we'll go over the actual budget and forecasts. And then on November 18th, we have the stakeholder presentations to the board. And we just want to reiterate that in order to present to the board, you need to present content that you've addressed through your comments to us through the process up to that point. And as well, you'll need to submit an actual presentation in advance of that meeting. Just next slide, please. And on the following one. So here are the questions that we actually asked in the matrix, and we directly answered all of the questions, and those were posted on the 14th of this month, but we just wanted to reiterate these as well. So I'll go over the questions. In your view, are the newly proposed 2021 external initiatives the ones the ISO should advance in 2021, and why? In your view, are there certain business initiatives that are more critical than others, and why? In your view, are there any business initiatives not captured that you believe the ISO should advance, and why? So as we go through the business initiatives and how we're planning to proceed, we capture themes of those comments, and those are included in the slides. And then towards the end of the presentation, after we go through the business initiatives, we've got the proposed business initiatives and how we're addressing those. So I'll just move on to the next slide there. So on to Pauline with the red tape reduction.
Great. Thank you, Karen, and good afternoon, everyone. So red tape reduction. During our August meeting, we had noted that the red tape reduction work linked to the government's red tape reduction program was a mandatory activity for us, and hence a high priority within the organization. Unsurprisingly, we didn't get any stakeholder comments back that took issue with that. But we more so had questions that came back that asked whether or not the ISO would be considering other activities within the organization to reduce regulatory burden generally, questions around whether stakeholders could offer their views and then provide feedback on areas of opportunity to reduce regulatory burden. And again, could the ISO provide a little bit more visibility and detail around what its plans are for red tape reduction in 2021? And so, you know, I think in a nutshell, the answer to all of those questions is yes. I think we already, again, in addition to sort of the very requirements-focused work that we have on the docket for 2021, we do expect, again, that there will be other work undertaken, the objective of which is to achieve regulatory burden more generally. And I think, again, if stakeholders have some comments or views in that regard, I think we will consider what those proposals are. And I think, you know, depending on the nature of the proposal, really for us, it will just be a matter of when, where, and how that may fit into the overall work plan for red tape. So with respect to some of the questions that we had around ongoing stakeholder visibility, right, of what we're doing on red tape and where are those opportunities for stakeholders to provide some feedback, what I would note is that the majority of the ISO's requirements are embedded within our authoritative documents, so i.e. our ISO rules, as well as our tariff. And so again, even from that perspective, we would expect stakeholders will have lots of opportunity to weigh in and provide input on changes we may be proposing to those types of documents, both during the engagement process that leads up to a filing, as well as during the regulatory proceeding itself, which will necessarily be triggered if we choose to make changes, again, to any of those authoritative documents. So again, I do think that there will be lots of opportunities for you to see what's going on and to provide your views. In terms of sort of understanding what our longer term plan is for 2021 and beyond with respect to red tape. We are in the midst of trying to finalize our various work plans. And so again, once we've dotted the I's and crossed the T's on those, our intent is to make that information more readily available so that you can see again what's in the plan and sort of time your activities accordingly. One of the things, again, that I would say as well is that red tape reduction is something that you're probably going to see in a variety of different ways in 2021. And while there will be some work that, again, is very requirements focused, really our lens on red tape, it's just we're trying to embed it in the way that we advance all of our active files. And so, again, for a number of the initiatives that are going to be in flight, tariff is a good example of that. We will be, again, advancing that work with the added lens of reducing the numbers of requirements that we have in that document. And so, again, as a stakeholder, I would expect to see sort of a combination of those things as we move forward in 2021. So you'll get your fill probably of red tape because it will be showing up in a variety of different places. And so that was my update, subject to any questions that you may have.
Great, thank you, Pauline. I should mention that we did stack the business initiatives, starting with the mandated business initiatives, which we see as top priorities, and then our top priority business initiatives, and then business initiatives, so that we have sorted them in that order. So we'll go on to the next slide.
Karen, we do have one question.
Okay.
From Akira.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Awesome, thank you. Thanks very much for the piece on the red tape. I was wondering if the ISO is planning to make kind of that ongoing work visible. So for instance, like a tracker of how many regulatory, because you had mentioned, I think, in our previous discussion that you're going to, the ISO is going to do some work on identifying all the regulatory requirements, and then kind of coming back and hopefully showing to the industry how you've reduced some of those pieces. And, you know, I like that idea of a plus minus column where each year you kind of see how many new regulatory requirements are added and how many come off, because that's it's a nice way to make kind of ensure that we don't have that creeping in of maybe some regulatory requirements that may not be necessary if you kind of rationalize them.
Well, as a start, I would say that hopefully the creep factor is not as high as you think it's going to be, because as we reduce, we are going to have pretty much a soft cap, right, whereby we can't actually raise the overall number once we achieve the government's target of minus 33% of where we're at today. So I think, again, we're going to try and figure out what's the most impactful way of making that information public, and how often, again, we would need to update it, things like that. So again, I know stakeholders are interested in that, and we do want to give an indication again in terms of where our major buckets of requirements are at, so that you can see how things are moving. But again, at a high level, I can tell you that most of them are within our rules as well as in our tariff. And so those are going to be the priority areas that we're going to be looking at.
Thank you, Pauline. Well, we can probably move to the next slide. On to Miranda.
Thanks very much, Karen, and good afternoon, everyone. So I've got a couple of the tariff-focused initiatives that are sort of the next two on this list. And I think clearly we heard a consensus from folks that yes, the work we're doing in the tariff space is a high priority, not only for us, but for the industry. We also heard very clearly, so this first initiative is really focused on sort of the implementation of the tariff that is currently before the commission and that we're hoping will be finalized and into implementation before the end of this year, and the ongoing implementation around rates and those kinds of things. And we did hear very loud and clearly from all of you that it can be challenging to find, to follow the various moving pieces in terms of our tariff on our website, and we have strived to correct that. And so we've centralized some of these tariff items on our website, but we've also published a 2020-2021 plan for all tariff-related activities, which hopefully allows you to see both timelines and how all the different pieces fit together and the order in which we may be addressing tariff pieces. And we will endeavor to keep that live with information on our tariff filings. For those of you that either don't have access to the AUCE filing site or to, we don't want to duplicate that, we want to make sure that it's definitely more accessible to all of you. And then maybe we'll move on to the next slide, which is around tariff modernization. And again, I will point to that same plan because we did hear loud and clear that people were unclear as to what exactly we meant when we talk about tariff modernization. And we've tried to describe that a little bit better in that document. But I also, I think there's two things. One is at the highest level, when we talk about tariff modernization, I think we're talking about first sort of the I'm gonna call it accessibility of our tariff, simplifying it. This links into the red tape reduction work that Pauline was just speaking to. How do we make it easier to understand, simpler to interpret and to apply? The second piece is around trying to have our tariff be a more adaptable document, recognizing that we are still waiting on final approval of a tariff that we filed in 2017. Ideally, we would like to see regulatory process efficiencies introduced into the tariff world. We're contemplating looking at a more modular approach to tariff filings so that they can be more bite-sized and move a little bit more quickly through the regulatory sphere, and also be perhaps a little bit more timely in terms of being able to adapt to changes that may be taking place. And then third would be the content of our tariff, which is being addressed through things like the consultation on bulk and regional tariff rate design and those kinds of things, which is about modernizing the rates themselves. To adapt to a changing world. So it's a little bit of an umbrella term for us trying to simplify and make a little bit more agile and tighten up our tariff, and then also update it to reflect current day responsibilities. We do have the engagement on the bulk and regional rate design restarting this week after a little bit of a pandemic pause. And moving back into that work. And so, we will look forward to continuing to work with the industry as we work to progress that work. And I'm happy to take any questions on the tariff side of things, if you'd like.
We've got one question here so far from Victoria. Thank you for posting the plan. You will see more feedback on this via other engagements, but the posted bookends from the September 24th presentation are causing mild panic amongst consumers. We recommend additional communication sessions for consumers.
Thanks very much, Victoria. And I agree that I think there needs to be not only the communication we're already having, but more communication. And you and others will hear from our tariff team for sure.
Any more questions for Miranda?
It looks like, Karen, we've got one from Ed.
Hi, Miranda. Ed DiPalzi here with DePaul Consulting. When you spoke about the tariff modernization, you also spoke about bringing it into modules. Is the ISO considering breaking out the storage tariff, the bulk and regional, as a separate module?
Thanks, Ed. That's a great question. So at this point in time, we've included them together because they've been working together for some time, and we think there are a number of links in there, but we are not opposed should it, as we work through the engagement, if it looks like it makes sense, we're not opposed to that idea. And so I think that's a bit of a stay engaged and stay tuned, and at the end of the day, we will work to do what makes the most sense there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, looks like we don't have any additional questions at this time.
We can move on to optimizing the grid with Dennis.
Thanks, Karen. So we obviously heard from everybody that optimizing the grid is an important priority, and so we will continue to focus on opportunities to optimize both the existing network and minimize the need or extend the timing out for any new infrastructure from a transmission perspective. And that, of course, needs to balance the reliability requirements on the system, as well as ensuring we've got market access and we're facilitating players to be able to get into our market. So it's obviously a balancing challenge, you know, that we will remain focused on. Now, as we had a session, I think a week or two ago, on how we've already started this process forward around congestion analysis and bringing more probabilistic studies into our decision-making for sure for supply-driven transmission. And so we will continue to both advance system projects by doing that type of congestion assessment and milestone triggers so that we can time the need for new infrastructure to confidently when we need it and not early in the process. And so we're trying to manage that timing of new infrastructure, recognizing construction of that infrastructure is the biggest cost. And so we'll work through need approvals for that type of infrastructure and then use milestones and triggers for the larger cost. We are in 2020 looking at application of technologies that will allow us to optimize the existing transmission system. And we've started that here in 2020 already. And one of those technologies is called smart wires, and it allows us potentially to manage flows on the power system and therefore, again, optimize the existing infrastructure and defer new infrastructure. So we will be working through testing that technology in 2021. At the same time, in 2021, we got feedback from some players that dynamic asset ratings is something we should be looking at. And I understand we have looked at that in the past, but as we go into 2021, we'll do a thorough plan as to seeing what opportunities there might be, both from a technology or a risk approach for dynamic asset ratings for the existing infrastructure. So that'll be part of our work plan for 2021. And then obviously we'll continue to see where there's flexibility in our existing standards to relax them if we can, to reduce costs for interconnection. Again, balancing reliability implications onto the network. And generally in that area, we'll look at our current reliability standards and see if there's opportunities to reduce costs that might be driven through those types of standards into the system. And so that's part of the lens that we'll have going forward for sure as well. So that kind of summarizes the optimizing the grid focus. It will continue to be a focus in 2021. And obviously it's all around cost management on the transmission system and ensuring we've got facilitating access to the market. I'll go to the distribution coordination initiative, and then I'll answer all the questions that might arise for the three of them. So from a distribution coordination perspective, again, we recognize that on the power system, there's technologies that are starting to integrate at different rates across different parts of the jurisdiction here in Alberta, particularly distributed energy resources and energy storage. And so we will continue to work towards enabling those technologies to integrate into our systems. And when we're looking at this, we're looking at integration, not just from a power system perspective, but also obviously cross-functionally along our mandate, covering market access, tariffs, and any regulatory implications for that technology. And so from a distribution coordination perspective, it's two pieces. It's the DER roadmap that we have out in front of us. That is an ISO DER roadmap so that we can be proactively ready for DER, that's distributed energy resources that are connecting across the system. Our focus is technical interconnection requirements right now around frequency and voltage ride through, because that's a reliability issue for us. And then also looking at understanding site data so we know where the DER is and can actually model it within our power system as we need to for all of our various studies. So that's kind of our priority focus from a distribution DER perspective. The other priority is working with the DFOs and TFOs to ensure that as things evolve on the distribution system and they reflect up onto the transmission system, that we're coordinated in the need for new infrastructure, potentially being requested and driven from the distribution side, and managing that coordination on a go-forward basis, both from a planning and near-term, all for the sake of trying to optimize the existing network and defer infrastructure if we can, but you know, balance reliability and market access as we go. So there's a common theme between optimizing the grid and the distribution coordination piece. And then the third one is around technology integration. And this is all about us being both aware of evolving technologies that are coming along the electricity value chain. Obviously, those that are directly impacting transmission, distribution, and supply are more relevant and more impactful for us. We want to be aware of those technologies and understand the potential impacts to reliability markets and tariffs so that we can proactively have a plan in place to integrate them onto our mandate and our system. Two examples of that is the DER roadmap and the energy storage roadmaps. That's all about integrating new technologies across our chain. And then we are working on our own awareness of technologies and our processes internally to stay informed of those as they move along the maturity cycle for new technologies. And our intention is to obviously share all of that with industry from our perspective, including the impacts we see coming from those new technologies, so we can have dialogue around those and adjust as we need to on a go-forward basis. So that is not a heavy lift for us. We're just getting our processes and awareness in place, other than the roadmaps for energy storage and DER. So questions on those three, Carla?
It looks like Akira has a question. Go ahead, Akira.
Thanks, Dennis. I think just, you know, what we've seen so far with the congestion assessments and such, I think the ISO's moving in the right directions. Definitely welcome improvements, and obviously grid optimization and making do with what we've already built, which is not to say that that's a small system, but definitely making sure that we're utilizing it to the extent possible is definitely the right direction, I think, for both generators and loads. Just a couple of questions. Do you have any specific views about things like the implementation of a process for non-wires alternatives, or the ISO's role in terms of ensuring consistency between locational signals at the distribution level and at the transmission system? Is that part of your area or part of these initiatives, or is that a separate tariffs matter?
Good question, Akira. I'm going to start with the non-wires alternatives, and then I'm going to hand the locational signals conversation to Miranda to hand that off. From a non-wires alternatives perspective, we obviously are looking for ways in which we can utilize non-wires alternatives to optimize the existing network. And the regulations have certain constraints within that, as far as our flexibility in that space. And so we'll have to manage within the current constraints until those constraints potentially get changed if the government moves forward with a policy review and creates a little more flexibility for us in that space. We're motivated to be able to utilize non-wires alternatives to defer infrastructure, again, respecting the market access and FEOC through that. So that would be our directional motivation as we go forward. And then on your question on locational signals on the distribution system, maybe I would ask you just to be, if you could be a little more specific, are you as to what type of locational signals you are thinking about? And then I'll ask Miranda to answer the question.
Well, I think it's related to some of the issues that we've kind of seen percolate up. Certainly just distribution connected, transmission credits, those types of things, the availability of those. And then the consistency with the ISO's own generator locational signals, which are largely line losses and guac payments. I guess, obviously the ISO jumped in on the tariffs and has talked about issues that they've seen with tariff shopping and such. Just wondering when we see kind of the light at the end of that tunnel, or is it something that is going to be wrestled out in regulatory forums?
That's a great question, Akira. So I think definitely that the question of price signals and alignment from transmission all the way down into distribution and ensuring that we have clarity of price signals and consistency of price signals and all of those things is definitely in the scope of the work we're doing in the tariff world. As you've sort of described, there are a number of things that are sort of outside of the direct purview of the ISO. And so there we have to sort of identify concerns, work collaboratively across the different sectors of industry to try to resolve them. Sometimes they may need commission and regulatory processes to help resolve them. Sometimes they may need policy intervention by government. And so I think I don't know the answer as to how we're going to work through all of those things, but I do know that we need to work through all of those things collectively.
Might I suggest, just as we saw the EUC kind of take on a bit of an issue that arose from a regulatory proceeding, but they took the work on and then delivered a report out, which was self-supply and export, kind of see some opportunities for the ISO to do the same thing rather than, because there are some issues that will definitely get played out in the regulatory forum, but what's being lost is because everything is inside that formal regulatory process, is a stakeholder consultation to canvas those views and get a clear scope or understanding of how many people this is affecting, what's going on in terms of the issues, rather than see that happen in a less formal kind of context where people may be more willing to engage in dialogue. We see it's happening in the regulatory form, and not only is that costly, but it often stilts that conversation to being very long written arguments that already polarized positions before you even get to the conversation about why is it an issue, is it a big issue, or is it something that can get resolved, and what are the different options that are available. Maybe some of that gives some better ease for policy discussions that might have to happen at different areas, but I definitely see the ISO having adding that a little, or that tool into the toolkit would be helpful, certainly.
I appreciate that, Akira, and I would agree with you. I think oftentimes there are ways other than formal regulatory processes to solve things faster and in a more sort of open and collaborative way. So I would agree.
Thank you, Miranda. We've got a question from Victoria. Will the ISO publish transmission line utilizations going forward? If not, will the ISO do so if it's required by an updated T-reg?
Thanks, Victoria. The answer to the second part of the question is if it's in the T-reg and we're required to do it by law, then yes, we will, for sure. On the first part, I'm not opposed to thinking through how to provide information on utilization levels of the network. And so maybe offline, Victoria, we can have a conversation just to bounce some ideas around it, and then I can take that and see how best to move forward with that. I do inherently remain concerned with individuals' interpretation of utilization levels on a power system, because I think a lot of people think utilization, it needs to be at like, it's tied to 100% of the line ratings or the asset ratings. And of course, power systems are built to deal primarily with contingencies and being able to continue to operate under contingency. And so that's a different challenge, and you're not actually trying to have your system running at 100%, because if you were, you wouldn't be able to keep the grid running. So be glad to have a dialogue on that for sure with yourself and see if there's something valuable that we can provide out to the industry in that space.
Thank you, Dennis. We've got another question here, more of a general question from Jeff Lester. Given that the government has strongly suggested that we take a measured and thoughtful approach to change as not to impact investor certainty for each of these proposed initiatives, will the ISO at the earliest point in engagement clearly ask stakeholders whether there is a defined need for the proposed change or initiative? If so, will the ISO commit to terminating the initiative if the majority of participants do not want the proposed change or initiative?
Okay, thanks, Jeff. That's a general general question, I guess, probably across the entire suite of initiatives. And so, Mike, this might be best for you to respond on behalf of all of us. So I'm going to hand it up to you, boss.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. So I think the way I would respond to that is we are going to be thoughtful in the approach that we take to initiatives, and we're going to make an assessment as to whether or not there is value in undertaking them. But we're also not going to commit to I'm going to call it a broad stakeholder voting approach, because some things may not always be popular, but they may sometimes be required. So the short answer to that is no, it's not a decision by consensus and vote, but we are going to be very thoughtful in how we approach things. And as we view them, we're going to view them through that lens that I described earlier, to ensure that it is not driving cost into the industry, that we're facilitating business, and that we're trying to keep ISO operations as agile and simple as possible. So I know that you would sometimes like to have the answer that says we're going to do exactly what stakeholders want, but frankly, that is not necessarily always the approach that we can take.
Thanks, Mike.
There's no other questions for those three slides. I'm going to pass it back to you, Karen.
And we're on to settlement audit, which is Todd.
Sure. Thanks, Karen. This actually was a stakeholder proposed business initiative back in 2018 and formed part of our 2019 business initiatives. And the initiative really relates to the audit of our financial settlement processes. We had started the audit in 2020 here, but due to COVID-19, we've actually pushed it out to 2021. So given that we've already initiated the audit, we plan to continue into 2021, hopefully have it completed by 2021. The comments we got back were limited, and there's general support for the initiative. So at a very high level, that's the business initiative, pretty straightforward. See if there's any questions, I guess.
Doesn't look like it, Todd.
We can move on to Miranda on the AS. Or sorry,
thanks,
operator market competitiveness enhancement.
Thanks, Karen. And maybe I'll make for the next three slides, maybe a bit of an umbrella kind of statement, which is, and this ties a little bit into the question that Jeff just asked, is in terms of the market initiatives, recognizing a commitment to stability and maintaining investor confidence in the marketplace, we've set quite a high bar in terms of advancing change. And in reality, I think, you know, the changes that are still on the table are all, in most cases, relatively, in terms of broad market design, they're relatively minor changes that are really about sort of the constant evolution that the market has had for the past 20 years and will continue to have going forward. But in all of them, in the individual stakeholder engagements, we will commit to doing an assessment of whether they are needed, if so, when they are needed, and the sort of the pacing and timing and approach to each one of those things. And so as we actually go into the year and through the year, there may be things that shift as priorities shift, as issues come up, those kinds of things. And so I will make that commitment right up front. This one, you may have noticed, we've had a little bit of a rebrand or a name change. And I think what we wanted to do was be a little bit more descriptive about what we're talking about here. For those of you who are avid readers of the reports that the ISO publishes, the recommendation that we had published from last fall on market power mitigation and our advice to the minister at that time, while it said that there were no changes needed at this point in time, it did identify that there were some opportunities to improve competition in the operating reserves markets. And so that's really what this initiative is designed to address, is to take a look at what was observed in that report, what opportunities may exist to remove some barriers to new entrants in these markets, whether that is things like minimum size requirements, ability to aggregate, barriers to new technologies participating, those kinds of things, and anything else that we may observe or identify that creates an opportunity to increase competitiveness in these markets. And so as we identify those things, then we will go through that engagement with stakeholders as to, you know, we've identified this opportunity, is it the right thing to do, when is it the right time to do it, all of those kinds of questions. And then we'll go to the next slide. And so both of these, this one and the next one on market sustainability and evolution, are really around that focused lens that we had put on any changes in the market that are either about integrating new technologies, enhancing flexibility to support the broad fleet shift to a greater amount of renewables, and any other sustainability issues that we identify in the market. And in reality, across these two slides, we're down to a pretty short list. And so we heard absolutely from people that a desire to minimize change, to be very deliberate in terms of any change that is being proposed going forward, and the importance of regulatory stability. And we 100% hear that. We agree with those priorities. And so as we go through our evaluation of these different pieces in the market, we will make decisions about go, no go, defer, pace, all of those kinds of questions. And so what's on the list on this slide are two items that are related to enhancing flexibility in the market, which is the ramp table and the dispatch tolerance. And the third is around our mothball rule, which is about broader market sustainability and price signals, and a commitment that had been made when the existing mothball rule was put in place, because it was put in place in an expedited manner, that it would be reviewed. And so following through on a commitment on that particular rule. On the next slide, you'll see a lot of things on this list that are now complete. The flexibility assessment that we've published, the pricing framework recommendation that we've published, and we've been evaluating both the benefits and the potential costs of shifting to sub-hourly settlement. And through that stakeholder engagement, we'll make the call on what we do in terms of this particular initiative. And I'm happy to take any questions folks may have on those three from a markets perspective.
People are being quiet, Miranda.
It's odd to have the market folks be quiet.
So no one's raising their hand. Perhaps they're just thinking through what their questions may be, but we've got nothing in the Q&A. Oh, there we go. Someone's raised their hand. Heather Ross. Heather, please go ahead.
Do I have to type this question or can I just ask it?
You can just ask it.
Okay. I don't know if this is the right time to ask this, but I do have a question about the initiative that was originally proposed in regards to priced interties. But is this not the right time to ask this question?
I'm happy to answer it now if you'd like, Heather. Okay. I think it actually comes up on the next slide, and so I can address it now, and then you've saved me having to jump back in. Okay. So that was originally on our market initiatives list, and as we worked through the stakeholder engagement on the various items on the market initiatives list, it fell to the bottom of the priority across all of these different pieces, and so we've taken it off the table for 2021 in terms of sort of our resource capacity and the number of things that we can move forward and all the rest of it. And that was through the stakeholder engagement on market initiatives that we had done that.
Okay. So we're saying maybe like in the future, moving forward, it would be brought back?
Yeah, I'm not going to rule that out at all. I think this is, you know, in an ideal world, all offers in the market would have the ability to price their offers however they see fit, and that would include imports. It's a relatively tricky one that's been on and off the list for quite some time, because while it sounds very simple, it's really not. And I won't rule out it coming back, but it won't be within the next 12 months.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Oh. All right, Karen, we can go to the next one. Doesn't look like we've got any additional questions.
So in our comment matrix, we'd explicitly asked market participants to tell us if they thought there were any business initiatives that weren't captured that they thought should be advancing and included in our initiative. So Mike's going to address the first one that was proposed, and then Miranda's already spoken to the second one. So go ahead there, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. The first one was a stakeholder comment that there was a recommendation that cost management be a standalone priority item. And, you know, quite frankly, the focus on cost management from the ISO's perspective now is coming at two levels. It's a strategic priority for us, and we've made that very clear both internally and externally. And we're also in the process of developing our 2021 corporate goals, and a specific goal will be embedded in our thought process around cost management for the organization. So we're going to be hitting this at two levels, and I think that should ultimately meet the desire of stakeholders as we move forward.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike on that? And then the next two, Dennis will address.
So we had feedback.
Oh, sorry. We do have a couple of questions before we start, Dennis. Victoria, if you want to go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. So Mike, the cost management, clearly a proposal from us. I'm sure other people jumped on that bandwagon as well. Our concern is that the ISO isn't seeing how important this is right now. I was on a call this morning where a bunch of information came in from the tourism industry suggesting that for hotels, their utility bills alone are sinking them. Their utility bills are higher than their revenue right now. I think this is going to hit you in a way that you're not even prepared for very shortly. There are discussions about maybe we need to have separate rates just to prop these guys up for a certain amount of time. So when we say we think it needs to be standalone, we think there need to be dedicated resources who are really just trying to find costs in the utility system to keep customers going right now. I can't emphasize this point enough. I know you think you've hit it in two different areas, but to have someone purely be responsible for costs is what customers are asking for right now. Don't have to answer me, but you have to think about it a little bit longer.
Well, I won't answer you specifically, Victoria, but I will say that we are very, very aware of cost and a need for cost focus. And there should be no doubt either within industry or within the ISO that this is a focus for us in the immediate term and in the longer term. So I don't think there's much more that I'm going to be able to say at this moment, but that is an absolute focus for the organization. And it has, you know, it started in 2020, the beginning of this year, and it's going to accelerate as we keep our focus on it.
So one of the areas we're going to need to see is a lot more and more reporting and more in-depth reporting on it. I know you've got a page on your website, and Dennis has been very helpful providing information there, but we're going to need a lot more than that. On the tariff side, looking at between 100% increase and 130% increase for certain customer classes is going to put companies out of business. So wherever it is on your importance scale, lift it up. Thank you,
Victoria.
All right, and the next one is Akira. Akira, if you want to go ahead.
Sure, just wanted to know a little bit more about what you're targeting in terms of your corporate goal. Is that the ISO's budget, specific line items? Is that how you're going to be deploying it down into the ISO organization? How does that corporate goal, is it's obviously, I'm presuming that it's a budgetary number, but we're going to see that what that number is. And after you kind of publish what you're planning to spend, where does the incentive come from to continue to push down costs?
Well, so it's broader than just an ISO budgetary number. Our ISO budget is a number, but relative to broad industry costs, it's actually a relatively small percentage of things. We are in the process of building out that corporate goal as literally as we speak. We've got our process in place that ultimately delivers the corporate goals for approval to the board at the end of the year, and we're framing up what that looks like. But it is more than just an internal G&A focus. Obviously, G&A focus, capital focus, but then a industry-wide focus of where do we see opportunities to drive cost and efficiency into the industry. And it's going to be in a number of different areas. So things like the red tape reduction initiative, those will all help drive cost efficiencies in the industry. So it's going to be in a number of different frames. And we are in the process of developing exactly what that looks like.
Perfect. Thank you. Akira, doesn't look like we've got any more questions with raised hands or in our Q&A. So we can, Dennis, if you want to now go ahead.
Thanks, Carla. There was two questions, one on loss factors from a stakeholder around providing funding in 2021 to our loss factor group to develop and offer loss factor estimates to project developers as part of the connection process and giving those customers earlier indication of what their loss factors might be once they get on the system. And so, our response there is we'll look at that in 2021. I won't have the team focus on that until we get done with the Module C historical loss factor work and get that off of our plate. And then we will have the opportunity to put some resources on whether it's possible and effective for us to provide any loss factor estimates for projects in the connection process. Recognizing the complexity of the current loss factor methodology is materially complex, given the 8760-hour methodology we're in right now. And so we'll need to think through that as we look at it in 2021. So my commitment is we'll look at it in 2021. If it's easily doable and effective in providing reasonable results, then we will offer that to customers in the process. The other question was around the energy trading system or our ATS, and that we should continue to review software modifications and implement improvements there. I can tell you we will continue to look at modifications to our ETS based on feedback from market participants, including those engaged with IPSA and ourselves in some conversations on that already. And so, yes, there are plans to update some improvements in 2021. Again, we will look at that and make sure, as Mike indicated, that the cost benefit is compelling to make that investment and make those changes in 2021.
Great. Thank you, Dennis. So we've got a question from Ed DiPalazzo.
Thanks, Dennis. Just Ed DiPalazzo, Deepaw Consulting. In regards to loss factors, just can't stress enough how important this is to some of my clients when they're thinking through projects, and they really have no reliable way of getting a loss factor estimate. And I think from an ISO standpoint, you're trying to send a price signal to customers with the loss factor, but yet the only time you get a reliable loss factor from the ISO is when you actually connect, like could be months before you connect. And so I think this is a real missing, and I'm kind of worried that you're gonna, I appreciate you'll put some thought into it next year, but if you wait until the rest of the loss factor work is done, you know, that could as well take you all of 2021, and then nothing happens on this initiative. And you know, from our standpoint, it just seems like a really important thing for the ISO to do, to allow developers to actually understand their costs and to understand if where they're actually positioning their projects makes sense. So I just wanted to stress that and see if you have any thoughts on that.
Sure, thanks, Ed. As it relates to the historical and Module C work, I can tell you we will not be continuing with it past all the way through 2021. We are on track to resolve all the calculations for those historic loss factors this year and move through the settlement and billing process in Q4 and Q1 of next year. So I anticipate that we'll be through that process by Q1 of next year, you know, pending any disputes around that process going forward. So so I intend to put some resources on this after Q1. Ed, I'd be glad to sit down with you to have a conversation to better understand the importance of this for your type of customers, so I can gain an appreciation for how much of an operational cost factor, loss factors would have in the overall financial decision-making for new proponents. And maybe we can explore the complexity to which we currently have now for loss factors that makes it difficult to predict loss factors in the future. And so be glad to have that conversation with you to see if there's something we can both learn through that conversation.
Sounds good.
Perfect. Thanks, Ed. We've got another question from Akira. Akira, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you. Just on the loss factors, it's not just a developer's issue. It's for any generator having difficulty translating that. I was just curious as to whether the ISO's own submission on red tape reductions moved anywhere in terms of the appeal to simplify the approach going forward on loss factors. Because if I was looking for low-hanging fruit that might save you some budgetary costs, give you back some resources to do better things with, it's definitely loss factors.
Well, thanks, Akira. Two things on that. I think we have done, I'll say, quite a bit of work here in 2020 to both increase our capabilities to automate our loss factor calculations of the current methodology and in-source from the consultants our ability to do that going forward. So that will help us should the methodology stay as complex as it currently is. Our message through the red tape remains the same that we provided through that process that we do think there's opportunity to simplify. Again, once the government moves forward with their policy review, obviously the regulations define how we gotta do loss factors right now, as well as a commission decision. So it would be through that process, I think, only that we could simplify our current loss factor methodology and reduce the red tape associated with that. But as Pauline indicated, we will also look at whether there's opportunity for red tape reduction within the constraints of the existing regulation and see if we can enable anything like that in 2021. Hopefully that answered your question, Akira.
Did, thank you.
Thank you. We don't have any additional questions. So Karen, you can move forward.
Yes, so we were asked what the length of some of the business initiatives are. So we've got a pictorial here of the business initiatives that we expect to end in 2021 and the ones that could potentially go into 2022. So as you know, stakeholder engagement framework is completed in 2020. The GTA we're planning to complete in 2021, settlement audit planning to complete in 2021, and then the other business initiatives would potentially go into 2022 and some of them beyond, depending what goes on with them. So any questions on that?
Okay. No, we've got nothing there, Karen. No question.
Okay. On to the next slide, please.
All right. You can still submit some questions if you have. Oh, we have one maybe before we kick this off.
Oh, this is from Evan Berry. Just a comment, I want to recognize the ISO's good work on ETS upgrades. Stay tuned and thanks. Thank you, Evan.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. So we just wanted to thank everyone for attending the 2021 VRP Proposed Business Initiative Session 2. And we would appreciate your feedback on the session. Similar to Session 1, to limit our stakeholder fatigue, your stakeholder fatigue, we're modifying how we collect initial feedback on the session by conducting a Zoom poll. So I'm just going to initiate that now. And the poll questions that we would have sent out in a short session survey remain the same. So just the purpose of the session was clear, information was presented in a clear manner, and the session was valuable. So I'm going to start that poll now. So I'll just give another couple seconds. All right, looks like we're finished. I'm going to end the poll and I will share the results. So not everyone participated in the poll, but we've got purpose and the information and the session was valuable. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on the session. If we can move to the next slide, and Karen, I'll pass that back to you.
Yes, so our next session is October 1st. And you can find the information on that on our website, and I think the registration is already open for that. And the purpose of the next session will be to present the preliminary forecast and budget information on the ancillary services transmission line loss cost forecast and the ISO's own budget. Along with this, you'll be able to submit stakeholder comments, and you'll be able to submit comments on the business initiatives on this session as well. In that next round of questions. So for efficiency, we've combined those two sets of comments into the one set of comments that will be based on the October 1st session. So those are due mid-October. So we'll send out a matrix on that on the same day that we present on October 1st. On to the next. I think that's it for the session. Thank you. Thank you for your participation, and hopefully we'll see you at the October 1st session. I don't know if there's any final questions before we finish up.
Doesn't look like, we do have one. It's from Akira. Akira, if you want to...
Maybe it's a suggestion just for future. Like I've seen the practice of showing us a multi-year roadmap, which is really, really helpful, and I appreciate it. The one thing that might kind of help us a little bit understand how those multi-year initiatives are being accomplished, maybe some of the outcomes that are expected for each of the years, kind of like, you know, like you do on goal setting. I think you do it for bite-sized chunks so you can actually measure your progress towards that. It certainly would help us understand how maybe initiatives that are multi-year kind of have tasks that roll into one another, and then kind of give us a better expectation about how 1 year fits within that multi-year initiative and what are kind of those measurable outcomes that we're expecting to see out of those. So it's just a tip or hopefully something that might be considered when you're releasing more of those roadmaps with multi-year initiatives, because they just look like right now big black lines that extend over 3 years, and we have like there's definitely things that get accomplished in each year. Kind of understanding what those are and how those pieces fit together certainly does give a better understanding or a better appreciation about the complexity of the task and how the ISO considers breaking those down to bite-sized chunks. Thank you.
Thank you, Akira. We'll think about how we might do that. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I don't see any additional questions in our Q&A or through the virtual hand.
Okay, well, we'll see you on October 1st.
Thank you so much for your attendance.
See you, everybody.